All right, everybody. Welcome back to the Visionary Practice Solutions podcast. I'm Dr. Sarah Neitzel, and I have with me today Dr. Stacey Ishman. She is quite the amazing entrepreneur, and I am super excited to have her here to give us kind of a different take on some options for careers in medicine. Even though this is a private practice business podcast, Dr. Ishman works mostly with academic physicians. So that's kind of cool. So if you guys are, you know, thinking about that as an option, this is definitely the person I would recommend talking to. So to get started, she is a triple board certified otolaryngologist. I always have a hard time saying that. So thank you for bearing with
it's
me.
Not easy.
And she's a sleep medicine physician. She is the past president of the International Surgical Sleep Society and formerly a full professor at University of Cincinnati. She's currently serving as the market chief medical officer for AmeriHealth Caritas in Ohio, and she's still practicing at the Peyton Manning Children's Hospital. And get this, I don't even know how you've done this, but this is part of her allure here, is that she's done more than 225 research papers and 20 book chapters, including co-editing Essential Sleep Medicine. So pretty amazing. She and I actually met through discussing real estate, because that's the other thing she's into. Dr. Ishman, welcome. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much. I'm going to have you do all my intros. So thanks so much. I sound very interesting in your eyes.
Isn't that exciting? Oh, and I haven't even gotten into the whole founder of the Academic Medicine Strategy Group, which we are going to work. We are going to talk about and work through. So yes, thank you so much for being here. I am really excited to get to talk with you. Tell us a little bit about like how you got here. Like what was Dr. Ishman back in the day when you graduated and how did we get here?
Yeah. So when I finished, actually, I wasn't sure if I wanted to do private practice or academics. Mm-hmm. So my goal was to take an academic job because in my mind, it was easier to start there and leave than to start in private practice and go to academics. And I know people who've done both. In fact, I have a client who I'm talking to tomorrow who is thinking about leaving private practice to go to academics.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's as common as people leaving academics to go to private practice. So I just walked in the door and said, I think it's easier to start here and switch. So I started there. I was a person who knew I was an executor and I enjoyed, you know, patient care. And so I didn't think I was an idea person, which I was wrong, but you know, at the
like
time, that's who I thought I was.
Sorely wrong, but yeah.
Yeah. Turned out I figured it out, but, I was looking for collaborators and the, you know, easy place to do that is in an academic setting. And it turns out I really enjoy team medicine and team science. And so worked with a lot of folks and slowly over time, actually my 230th paper just got published.
Oh my gosh.
But I just was like, let's try this. And so that's how I ended up getting into it. And then I loved it, but I loved teaching. I think most people go into academics, teaching is a big positive. And or the collaborative spirit of being able to do fun research or see complex patients. Those are the most common reasons I hear people say they go into it. And usually you're passionate about one, often you're passionate about two. I've rarely met the person who loves all three of those missions,
but
somebody's out there. And so I will tell you, I was actually more excited about the research and the teaching than I was about the patient care. And it wasn't that I didn't care about patient care, but after you've done, you know, the same case for 15 years, teaching it's way more exciting than doing it, unless it's a really complicated thing or patient. And so, that was sort of my journey. And then I honestly wanted to have a bigger impact. So I was, you know, doing the research, hoping to make a condition better. My specialty is persistent pediatric sleep apnea. Somebody was like, you can make a career on that. I'm like, yeah, I did.
Yeah. Yep. Right.
That's a thing. But it's not everybody's thing. Right. So everyone's got their thing. And then I wanted to have a broader impact. So I started working in a population health level. I built a utilization management program for the hospital I worked at. And over time, I don't know if you people know much about, you know, publicly financed healthcare, but it's not in the best shape right now.
Right.
And
right.
So, yeah. So they actually laid off all the medical directors and then consolidated all of them under one instead of the three or four that were there at the time. So I got laid off, which doesn't really happen to physicians very often in academic medicine. But it gave me the opportunity to say, who do I want to be? What do I like the most? I mean, there's an identity crisis when you get laid off. Like, don't get me wrong. It wasn't like kumbaya.
Right.
But my 14-year-old at the time was very impressed that I was getting paid not to work for 6 months. So There you go. I did explain you don't start off in that job. You have to work your way into it. But
right, right. This isn't how this is supposed to go.
Yeah, but I was like, that is not a job strategy if anybody's right. talking to their teenagers.
Right.
But it gave me a little bit of bandwidth to figure it out. I was already doing some locums and per diem work. So I still do a per diem job 1 week a month, which I love. When you talk to academic centers, they don't really know what to do with a doctor who wants to work 1 week a month or 1 day a week. Like that's right. not a standard model for most of them.
Right.
So I found places where I could do that. And I realized I still loved it. I had left clinical medicine for 18 months and I went back to it because I still really like the opportunity to bond with a patient. And I think pediatric medicine is super fun.
Yeah.
So I'm a pediatric ENT surgeon, and which is easier to say than otolaryngologist.
Oh my gosh. Yes.
And that was really fun. So I realized the thing I loved the most and I missed the most about my academic time was the mentoring and the coaching. I had gotten awards for mentoring and I really loved it. And I firmly believe, like, when people are like, why are there so many doctors who are coaches? Because we are all coaches to some degree. We help each other. We coach our patients.
We coach our patients. Like
this. We coach our patients. We may not call it that. And there are some fundamental differences between them that you have to learn in order to coach well. And one's more about asking questions and about giving advice, which is the biggest problem I think people have when they go into it. But I think it's why, rightfully, there's a lot of physicians who are coaches because they have learned this style in many ways. And so I love helping faculty members figure out what they want to do with their life or improve their life or get the paper or get the promotion or decide that the practice setting they're in is not the right one. Like all of those things were the thing I liked the most. And so I actually talked to a whole bunch of my mentors and sponsors, and one of them who has been giving me great advice for 20 years was like, this is what you love the most. Why don't you just coach on that? And I was like, that seems super obvious.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, when somebody says the one thing that you're like, oh, ding. You said it. And I was like, yeah that's what I'm going to do. And, you know, so.
Yep. Same thing happened to me. It was like, wait, but you enjoy really helping other docs, like, in the business. And I'm like,
yeah,
sure do. Sure do. Like, you are not wrong.
This is actually what coaching is, right? Like, he coached me to do what I needed to do. And it was the aha moment I needed to be like, yes, that's what I want to do. It sounds like you had the same fantastic coaching moment from somebody.
Yep. It is all about the questions. What are some of the problems that, like, with the clients that you do have and the people that you do talk with, like, what are some of the problems that you feel like you're seeing pretty consistently across academic medicine? Because I mostly talk to private practice docs, which is a whole different set of problems. I'm totally unfamiliar. So tell us about that, because I want to see if, you know, I want people to know that, like, what they're feeling is not abnormal.
Well, there's a couple of things I think that are universal regardless of your practice setting, and it's time management.
Okay.
How do I finish my notes? How do I get home on time? How do I stop doing work at 9 o'clock at night or 4 in the morning or whenever the heck people are trying to fit it in? Super common. Some of the more academic things I think are, I'm doing all this work and it's not getting me promoted, or I'm waiting for someone to notice what a great job I'm doing and offer me the next gig and no one's offering it to me. Or I had a great conversation with this woman who's so active nationally, and she was doing a national organization and they were about to go for like the next leader for the group. And she raised her hand and they're like, oh, we already asked this guy who's on your committee doing slightly less work than you. And she didn't know when to raise her hand. She didn't know to raise her hand. Mm. And how you navigate the politics of some of these leadership roles, both at organization levels and in your institution. And women do this universal thing where we wait for someone to notice how great we are and notice the work. Mm-hmm. And they do notice the work, but they don't necessarily actually award us the next job unless we say, I would love to be the next leader of this organization. And then it's the aha, it makes sense. But it doesn't necessarily happen, especially when it's another man who's in charge. They recognize the contribution. They think we're doing a great job. Oh, it never occurred to me that you want to be the next leader.
Right. Right. Yeah.
And then the other big thing, I think there's a mid-career pivot point where you're like, I have been killing myself. I'm doing great. Do I even want to do this anymore? Is this what I wanted to be when I grow up? And then there's a point too, I think you and I had a conversation about a different colleague, but where you're doing some leadership. And then there's a lot of things about how you manage groups and how you lead, which we are not taught. And so I think as we get into that, trying to figure out the right way to manage that stuff is hard.
Yeah. With the coaching side of it, so it sounds like, you've taken on a ton of leadership roles anyways, but like when you moved into coaching, how did that, like, what was the thing that you saw that you were like, okay, this is the change I can make. Like this is one of the big things that I think people need to be aware of and that I can help with.
So alignment with values.
Ooh.
So I think this is where many, many people get stuck, is that they think that what they're doing is everything you're supposed to do. And some of it's we start off with, we're supposed to say yes. Like everybody's told that in
Right.
academic medicine, say yes to everything,
Yeah.
which is not the best advice, but we did it. And then all of a sudden we're like, I'm doing a lot of things that I don't know if they're aligned. So one of the first things I do with everybody, whether it's their first year of practice or 10 years in, is ask if they know their values. Most of us don't. I didn't. I don't
Yeah.
even know if I could have named 10 values.
Right.
So I have this big list that people start with and they circle and they figure it out and we get down to your top five values. And then we do a time audit and we look at your calendar. Now, where are you spending
Yes.
your time and does it align with your values? And it is a starting point that I use for most people, unless they've already done some work and have a better feeling for that, because that's what makes us feel bad, is if our time is not spent in the place that we value. And then you feel like you're not doing the right thing. Your life doesn't make sense. Your career doesn't make
Right.
sense.
Right.
And you're missing out on stuff. Like there's this guilt and there's all these shoulds that are happening. And so I think that's sort of the universal place. And what you're out of alignment with is different with different people. I can tell you for myself, there was a point where I was on four or five editorial boards and I was the associate journal editor of a journal. And I hated every second of the job.
Yeah.
But I said yes to it six times.
Yep.
And so there was five, and I was mid-career. I might have even been a full professor. I was becoming chair of the board of governors for my academy. And it was like the opportunity to say, and I
Right.
resigned from five editorial boards and this associate journal editor job in one day. Don't tell my kids, but it was the best day of my life, like better than having children, better than getting married. It was like so amazing because I was so out of alignment with what I
Yeah.
cared about and what I enjoyed. And I saw the value. I felt like I should want to do
Right.
this. But I
Right.
hated it. I
Yes.
hated it.
Yes. The shoulds just, oh, that is such a hard thing. Like, and you know, too, I think the other thing that can happen is like there's this period of time where we're working through our careers. And I think this is across the board, right? Like you're working towards, getting this big dream thing that you want, you get it. And then all of a sudden, all of the opportunities start coming in. And I feel like it's a little bit of a test from the universe to just be like, how bad did you want the thing that is like most aligned with your values? But when you have all these other things, like, how bad did you want that? Because I'm going to give you like all these other opportunities. And it's wild how much, like, when you're really getting going and you're getting the momentum, these other opportunities come in. And I don't know if you've heard that, like, the woman in the red dress, like, Alex Hormozi talks about it all the time. And I love it because it's just like, it's that Matrix scene where you're like, you're cruising along, you're on the sidewalk. And then all of a sudden, the woman in the white red dress, like, passes by and you just turn around and get completely distracted. And we also call it shiny object syndrome, but like it's so hard because you think you're supposed to just like say yes to doing all the things and you get so excited, especially if you're kind of that like entrepreneur mindset too. It's like super tempting. But God, that's such a hard thing. And then you let it all go and you're like, I'm just done. Like
So this is actually what I have so many clients who work on. So after we do that thing I just talked about, we create your filter. What's
Oh,
your filter for
good.
yes and your no's? And if
Yes.
it doesn't fit one of those things, it's a no that you feel good about, but also then if you can try and sponsor somebody else. So then you feel really good about it that
I
I it doesn't
love
fit my
that.
filter, but it might be great for Sarah. So I'm going to recommend
Right.
Sarah for this.
Right. Oh, I love that idea too. That definitely would take out that feeling of like, oh God, I'm giving this up and what am I going to miss out? That
Well,
FOMO
also,
feeling.
we have to remember, like if I say no to something, what if I say yes to something I don't want to do? I am literally taking an opportunity from someone who might love this.
That's a good
And
point. Yeah.
that's not great either. So I think women always have to feel like we have found the community reason for why it's okay to say no. Like I
Right.
want to start off with like you can just say no. Like if you
Yeah.
could just work on that,
Right.
that's therapy, by the way, not coaching necessarily, but
Right. Which is a lot of what we end up doing anyways, and that's totally fine. Like
And I'm going to be unapologetic and tell you that I feel pretty good about no
Right.
because it's not even just my filter. Like I know that there's somebody out there who's dying to do this thing. Like, think about how many things you wish. The first time I asked God asked to do an editorial board, I was so excited. I wanted somebody to ask me.
Right.
I tried it and I didn't love it, but that I needed the opportunity to know that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's somebody out there who understands the honor. It does help them get promoted. Like there's yeah. reasons for it in that one particular example. And I was sitting on five of them that I hated. It was stupid. And I actually sponsored five people to get on five different boards and somebody else to get an associate editor. They were all happy.
Oh, I'm sure they were ecstatic. Thrilled.
But like, right. So my yes wasn't helping anyone.
Right, right, right. In fact, it was taking a position from somebody that could have really, really loved that. Yeah,
and I absolutely. Wasn't showing up with the enthusiasm right. of somebody who thought this was great.
Right, right. Oh, I love that. That's a great lesson. What is the approach that you think now is working the best for academic docs to take when, like, let's say, like, they need to make changes within their organization? So maybe it's not even just growing necessarily, but, like, you know, trying to optimize their own job satisfaction. Like, how do you feel docs should approach that?
I think starting off by understanding what you want and where you are mm-hmm. is a good starting place. Because usually if you're thinking about that, there's something that's not in alignment. So if you can right. identify it, super useful. If you have great mentors, if you have good coaches already, if you mm-hmm. have a great division chief, like have those conversations. I sometimes think we can get to it much more quickly with coaches. I know you and I yeah. were talking at the beginning about how we both have a ridiculous number of coaches oh, that yeah. are our own coaches.
Yeah.
because
yeah.
I find the outside perspective gets me there much more quickly. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate paying somebody for the opportunity of cutting through the noise and a really yeah. quick amount of time.
Yep.
Honestly, quicker than I can usually get to with even my spouse or,
absolutely.
You know, my friends, mm-hmm. because there's an external view and nobody's trying to worry about my feelings, which
right.
is
right. Good. Right. Like, don't tiptoe around it. Tell me what I need to know. Like,
yeah. Like, what are you seeing? Like, not like, oh, yeah. I don't want you to feel bad. I was like, right. well, I already feel bad. That's why right. I'm talking about this.
We're there. So let's help. Yeah.
yeah. Yeah. So I just think, really, like, look around, and it might be something as easy as like, ugh, I hate this work. But yeah. lots of times it's like, I'm doing things I think are valuable, but why don't I feel like I am happy or I'm mm-hmm. getting what I want? Mm-hmm. And it's sometimes deeper than just like, I need to get off the editorial board. It's like, right. what did I really want? Am I really where I want to be? Is everything aligned? Or it's that feeling that you're doing so much work. Why aren't I being rewarded for it?
Right. Right. Do you feel like this kind of leads to a lot of burnout too? Like, this is kind of the start yeah. of it. Yeah.
Yeah. And I will tell you, so the people who come to me really burnt out, I tell them not to worry about any of this stuff. I was like, don't get mm-hmm. promoted. Don't say yes to anything.
Right.
Start saying no to things. Cut things. Like,
your new word is no.
Get rid of all of this. Like, they're like, what should I do for my promotion plan? I'm like, ignore it.
Yeah.
That is the first thing.
Not like, have one right now. Yeah.
Right. Like, tell everybody you're not doing anything. And then let's get some, you know, some alignment so that you, and usually, honestly, we end up starting with time. Because
yeah.
when you get so burnt out, I think everything gets out of control. Mm-hmm. You're not finishing your notes. And then that's the stuff that you can't even move from urgent important to anything else on the Eisenhower matrix.
Oh,
if you
I
can't
love that
just
matrix.
Get that done, right? Like, you're like, mm-hmm. I'm at the bottom of Maslow's triangle of needs right now. Like, I am not trying to be enlightened. I am trying to get food and fire.
Right,
you know?
Right, right. Yeah, yeah. Oh, well, then tell me a little bit about this academic medicine strategy group. I am super excited to hear about this.
Thank you so much for asking about that. We are really excited because we've just transitioned from being basically purely a one-on-one coaching business, and we still do that. But we have added some more coaches, and then we started working at the department level. So we realized that we had this opportunity to change the culture of a whole department, not just for one physician.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
And so we are working with several departments and doing some strategy sessions, doing some whole group workshops, adopting the framework. We're doing some monthly implementation sessions. So everybody who's at slightly different places can jump in, ask their questions, but then I'll learn from each other.
Mm-hmm.
And what's so cool is I'll talk to one person about one thing and another person about another thing. And in our follow-up session, they've talked to each other and helped each other and upped the game. And so it's
okay.
the coolest to see how you can help change a division or a department. And so that's sort of what happened is we said, okay, we're not really just a coaching business. We're doing faculty development. We're doing yeah. whole group workshops. We're coming in when people have problems with communication. We're coming in if somebody has just a specific topic to work out, there's somebody who wants us to talk to them about grant proposals for a funding mechanism. We are helping somebody else build a research organization so that they can do that effectively. And so it's really fun because mm-hmm. we have grown to be what I wished I was working with when I was a faculty member.
Right.
Which is somebody who can sort of work at problems at lots of different levels and have some frameworks to help the individual feel good, but then also level up. And this is what I think is cool. I think we're all used to thinking about coaching. Like, I have a problem. How do I fix it?
Yeah.
This approach really tries to say, like, we're elite athletes.
Yep.
We need a performance coach.
Yep.
Tell me how I might be perfectly happy in my job, but you know what? If you gave me a few pointers, I could level up and really do exactly what I want to do more quickly, more effectively, just like an athlete does. And so this proactive version of how do we level up your department is really cool, because we have a couple departments who are employing us to do that. Not like we're having trouble, but like we're doing okay. How do we go from good to great?
Right. Right. No, I love that. Cause I mean, that's totally it too, is, you know, we think, I know when I first started coaching, I thought like, oh, I have to have a problem to fix for this. And it's that's not it. I needed somebody to help me level up. Like, I didn't even, I think, know what my potential truly was. And yeah, same thing. Like the clients that I work with, it's very much like they're already doing it. It's not that they're not successful at it. It's just like, then we start talking about how do we 5X what you're doing and work less. Like I want this to be designed around, like you said, your values, you know? So if a physician is feeling like they kind of need that amount of work, even just like overall within their department, is that something that like physicians are bringing to you at their level, or are they needing to kind of get their departments on board to work with
you? Well, that's the cool thing. We have both structures. We do one-on-one. Mm-hmm. And you can do a package of one-on-one, and some people bring themselves in. They're like, I need help.
Yeah.
I'm just willing to do this. I'm going to pay for it. Then we have another group that's like, hey, I have support from my department. I would like them to support me to do this. And then we have a third group who the department said, we want everybody to be able to level up. Can you come in and work with our team? And we give them a bank of hours that they can give, you know, different amounts depending on needs and interest. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so that part's really, really cool too. What I find is interesting is I think we have this old school view of coaching. And so there's definitely a group, usually the more senior physicians, who've only seen coaching for remediation.
Right.
And so there's this thought, like, I shouldn't walk in there. I don't want to talk to her. I don't have a problem. Or mm-hmm. I don't want to talk to this team. I don't want it to look like I have a problem. And I think that is an interesting problem I hadn't really thought about, because I think we recognize athletes have coaches. We haven't really, and most chairs, honestly, have coaches. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But as senior physicians, we haven't always thought like, oh, the way to level up is to have a coach.
Right, right. Well, and we're used to having to have all the answers. So it's like, if you're not, and you're having to ask for help, it somehow reflects that like, oh, I don't know. And it's, it is a weird mental game we play. So how do you feel? I mean, you know, we were talking about you having a ton of coaches. I do too. How do you feel like the coaches really have done for you personally too, right? Like, because it's more than just the professional aspect of it.
So in this era, I think we don't need a coach to tell us, most of the time, we don't need them to give us what to do. Mm-hmm. What we need is somebody to help us with the accountability, with the implementation. What do we do when we run into problems? And the other thing is, it's nice to have somebody who's gone there before.
Yeah.
So talking to somebody who's walked this road, found the problems, can tell me about them before I hit them.
Yes.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
I might still hit some of them, but at least I knew they were coming.
Yeah, I might still sideswipe it, but at least I kind of knew, you know, I had a little bit of a heads up. Absolutely. Yeah. Okay, great. Is there anything else about your group that you wanted to kind of talk about? Or maybe we just kind of talk about how people can come work with you, like where they can find you too.
Yeah, that would be great. So we are the Academic Medicine Strategy Group, and our website is www.amedsg.com, amedsg.com, or you can probably just Google Stacey Ishman and find us. We work both at the department level and at one-on-one, and we have a course to help new faculty get
fabulous.
Going. And I am trying to actually convince a company to give it to every ENT resident who graduates and then work on all the rest. Because I think instead of giving me a stethoscope, I would have loved if somebody gave me a roadmap.
Right. Right. Agreed. Agreed. Wonderful. Okay. I always ask everybody for a couple of book recs when we get to the end of this. And we've had some pretty consistent ones, but I am super curious which if you had to say a couple of books, which ones have been the most impactful for you, even just recently?
Yeah. So my two favorites this year I ran a coaching group and all the women were like, have you read Likeable Badass? And I had not.
Oh my gosh.
And Allison Fragale, Fragale, wrote it. It
okay.
is amazing. And the core premise is that you have to have warmth and assertiveness in order to be taken seriously and to lead well. And many people walk in with a lot of warmth, but not enough assertiveness, and they're not taken, they're taken for granted.
Yep.
Or they walked in with too much assertiveness and not enough warmth and are not as effective. And so you need to start with warmth. Mm-hmm. And then have assertiveness, but they need to be coupled. Mm-hmm. It was a phenomenal book for me because I am the one who walks in guns blazing.
Yep.
And then forget the warmth. Either I write the email and then I go back and add the hope you're good at the beginning.
Yes.
I don't know if anybody else does that.
Yes. Oh God, yes. I forget all about the intro and the outro. And then I'm like, I should not sound like I'm mad all the time. That would be great.
My wife is like, don't you want to know that stuff? I'm like, I just want to get the thing done out of my head. It's not that I don't care about people.
Right.
I just need to get this down and then I can go back and be like, how was your day? I hope everything's good.
Right. I love that. Okay.
And the second one is called The Diary of a CEO. I am 2/3 of the way through it. It's written by Stephen Bartlett.
Yes.
I think he has a podcast. Didn't you tell me he has a podcast?
Yes, he does have a podcast. And it's very interesting, the people that he talks to. So I am super curious about this book.
Yeah. So he basically started this amazing marketing business as a very young man.
Yeah.
And the book has 33 laws of business and life. I'm only on 24, to be honest.
Okay.
And I'm already so blown away and love it and have implemented some of it already.
Oh,
like
good.
I literally,
okay.
The chapters are short. They're like 4 or 5 pages. Perfect. There's one take home message it's written like a marketing person wrote the book, right?
Yeah.
But it's phenomenal and I super love it. So I am highly recommending it.
Oh, good. Love that. Okay. Those are actually two that I did not have on my list. So thank you for broadening my library as well.
Perfect.
Me doing some audiobooks. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate so much you being here and chatting with everybody. Definitely if anyone's even considering, leaving private practice, going to this, or if you're, thinking that the only way for you to get, what you need is to leave academic medicine, like, I think Dr. Hirschman's a really good person to at least talk to, because, you might find that there's a lot you can even do within where you're at now, and you don't have to completely upend your life. I love the idea of people going into private practice, but I'm not going to be selfish enough to think it's for everybody. So, well, thank you so much for being here. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. I loved it.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll do this again sometime. We'll talk to you later.
Thanks. Bye.